This, instances of similar psyche traveling have been reported among the still living elderly who are very ill or incapacitated in nursing homes. Their minds may visit other living persons as obsessing entities, often causing the host to feel their illness or weariness or pains while they, the obsessing minds, enjoy the activities of relative health and vigor through their hosts. In cases of this type, it seems that the entities can come and go rather freely and are not imprisoned either in their own bodies or in the bodies of their hosts. It needs to be pointed out that the obsessing minds are not usually aware that they are troubling or hindering their hosts. They are not malignant, merely unaware of the effects of their intrusion. Still, friends may be speaking accurately when they say of someone, "She just seems to be obsessed about her father's being in the nursing home," or, "He is simply obsessed with fears since his wife went into the hospital." Tom, an unusual example of the mind, or a part of the mind, of a living person obsessing another is that of Tom, a client of mine who suspected that he was host to one or more entities and asked to be released from them in absentia. One of the women I trusted served as channel, and through her we received a situation that perplexed me considerably at first. When I requested the strongest entity in Tom to come, a haughty personage came who said he was Ramus, his English spelling of the Eastern name, a ruler. "Why do you bother one such as I?" he asked, pompously. He said that he was the leader of a group of herders apparently a nomadic tribe and he felt that I was 116, totally wrong in insisting that he was inside of anyone else. He admitted that maybe someone else was in him. However, at times he saw this other, a man, standing and watching as his dancing girls performed. It is true that no one else can see him. He said the stranger never approached the dancers. The idea that perhaps this visiting male might invade his harem of women through his own body, however, plunged him into a dark anger. "I want him gone. I want him gone." It had not been difficult for me to perceive that his attitudes towards women were quite similar to those of Tom himself. I theorized that this similarity had drawn Tom's dreaming or fantasizing mind to the tents of Ramus in India and had built up a strong connection between him and Ramus, into whose body this part of Tom's mind might well have entered at times, so that when I called for the entity within Tom, it was Ramus who came at the call, invading Tom periodically or because of the remarkable similarity between the men's attitudes. After giving Ramus a little lecture that women were minds and hearts as well as bodies and suggesting that he begin the adventure of finding out what the dreams and hopes, the likes and dislikes of his several wives were, I ended, "Here is a sword of liberation, Ramus, a sword made of light, not a sword of destruction or killing. Take it and hold it out horizontally and draw it down gently between you and Tom, and all the ties between the two of you will be severed and fall away. You may keep the sword, if you wish, but remember, it is not a sword of destruction but one of freedom, to cut chains and fetters." The young lady channeling said afterward that he did keep the sword. She said that he agreed with a sort of mental shrug 117, to the stipulation of treating his women more understandingly, as if saying, "Well, if this is the only way I can get rid of him." Ramus insisted that he is alive, dwelling in India. Therefore, this was a case of obsession by part of the mind of a living person, whether it was Tom's mind in Ramus or the other way around, or alternating. We therapists are still learning how mobile and unfettered a mind can be, while at the same time the same mind can be limited and fettered by its own list of fears. Gina, in April 1990, I had a long conversation with the lady sitting next to me on an airplane, exchanging information about ourselves. I mentioned my work with hypnosis and releasements, and instantly she began quizzing me about the symptoms of obsession. She felt that her little daughter needed a releasement. Shortly before the child was born, the child's grandmother killed herself just a few days before the grandfather returned home, dying of cancer, from the hospital. The mother, at term in her pregnancy, was undoubtedly wrenched by these events, and the unborn child, at the very least, sensed and responded to the mother's emotional turmoil. At worst, the child was open to invasion by entities, wanting to help the little girl, who was now 5 or 6, I asked the mother if she would like for me to see what I could do with the assistance of friends after I returned home. With gratitude she said yes. When, a few weeks later, a coworker channeled for the child, Gina, we found one entity, a man of middle age who had slept away, heavily drugged to ease the pain of 118, far advanced cancer. He found himself looking down at this person on the bed, looks like an old person. A nurse comes, says, he's gone now. But I'm not gone, I'm here. He said he was not ready to go, should have done more, needed to help my family more. So he stayed in the earth plane near his family by going into the infant Gina to help her breathe. She needed me. He took into her his own restlessness, discontent, desire to run away, etc., not realizing that all his traits, both positive and negative, would influence her with him in her. Before leaving, he warned that Gina's ears should be examined, that there was a deep infection in one of them. The man's mind also told us that there were entities and Gina's mother. The first we found was a high school girl who had drowned when her boyfriend's car failed to make a turn on the way home from a party and went into the river. They couldn't see me, cause I wasn't in the car. I don't know why they couldn't, cause I was there. She didn't want to leave Gina's mother until I reminded her that it was selfish of her to stay and be a parasite in anyone. Then she was willing. The other entity in the mother was a child whose name, when spelled phonetically, was Dinker. She had died in 1915 in Syria, her chest hurting, her body hot. She was leaving her sick body and it felt good. I was going to go, but Mama screamed and cried and yelled, "Don't go! Don't go!" I wanted to go but I couldn't, crying hard, frightened, barely able to talk. I don't want to go if Mama doesn't want me to, but I do want to go. Weeping hard for several minutes before being gently quieted. I stayed with Mama a long time, till she left me. This means through death. Usually, I looked for a place to go, for somebody who wanted me. This lady needed me. I don't know, she just needed me. Somebody had died 119, and she was sad. That big girl, the other entity, didn't help her much. I didn't mind staying. When Tinka saw someone coming for her, she smiled. She's running, she's running. It's my mama. She's saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. But now we're together again. Chapter 5: Rescue Work Among the Invisibles. Does it sound more intriguing or more scary to speak of ghosts, or of entities within a person? In actuality, there is very little difference except to the individuals directly affected by these invisibles, those persons living in a haunted house or close to a haunted cemetery, for instance, or those obsessed or oppressed by entities trapped in their bodies or auras. In dealing with all these lost, confused entities, the approach is similar and the attitude always needs to be one of wishing to help the disembodied soul, whether or not it thinks it wants help. When a location is suspected of being haunted or has the reputation of being the site of unexplained noises or feelings, we may suspect that a discarnate entity is staying there for one reason or another. Or it could be only that the old vibrations, old residues of former negative energies, have remained attached to that location and there is no soul, no entity needing release, only the old memories needing to be neutralized. Denning, 1996. 121. At a workshop in California in 1992, I called all the souls who had lost their bodies in or near the large hotel since it was built there in Marina del Rey. My coworker in hypnosis saw a group of spirits coming at our invitation. I spoke first to the children and youths in the group. Several of the children had drowned. The oldest, a lad of 14, had drowned farther up the coast and his consciousness had followed his body as it washed down to this area. He had taken over the leadership of the dozen children, herding them as they amused themselves watching visitors and tourists, they themselves unseen, of course. The leader disclaimed indignantly that they ever caused any trouble, such as poltergeist activities. I asked for a wise high spiritual guide to come for the children, and they followed the guide into the light. Then I spoke to the adults, helping them in the same way. Some had died of heart attacks in their hotel rooms, a few had committed suicide. All were deeply grateful to be remembered. Others who had died here no doubt had already gone, these were only the souls that had remained earthbound. Then I asked for any souls whose bodies had died during the past centuries at that location, including Indians, Spanish, and French. Only one came, as seen by my co-worker. He, a Spanish soldier, had been there for a long time, that is, nearly 3 centuries, Earth time, kept back by the guilt of having killed a fellow soldier. His story is related in a later chapter. Discarnate and visible entities are around us all the time, everywhere. It is not necessary for us to wait until we hear of a haunted house or see a ghostly form. Psychics tell us that there are multitudes of such wanderers dwelling in the invisible vibratory levels of the astral plane, imperceptible to most of us living on the earth plane. Intelligent entities on the other side informed Dr. Wickland that a long line of entities waited for their turn to speak through Mrs. Wickland, the channel. Even some free spirits not earthbound. 122, who wish to come voluntarily and give information, like the poetess Ella Wheeler Wilcox, had to wait their turn as well, so few were the psychics available back then who could channel messages from the other side. When we assist earthbound souls who have not become snared in a living person's body or aura, we call it rescue work instead of releasement. I believe the term began with the London group of psychics who helped soldiers killed during VI. The techniques are just the same as releasement work. The only difference, it seems, is that many of the wandering entities still feel lost or confused, whereas most of the entrapped ones think they have found a warmth or a lighter place and are safer than before. Most suicides remain earthbound. Among the earthbound wanderers are many, if not most, of the psyches of those who have committed suicide. The picture of the post-death condition of such persons given by Annabel Chaplin in her book, The Bright Light of Death, is symbolic of dreary, head in the mud stagnation. For many souls it is not accurate in the literal sense, unless for those that Chaplin saw. As with all other things, much depends on the individual circumstances of the person who killed himself or herself, although in nearly every case it seems that there comes a realization very soon that this was not the best way to deal with the situation, that a better way could have been found, that suicide did not solve the problems after all and certainly did not obliterate the person's feelings of emotions and suffering, nor awareness of others' reactions to the suicide. 123. While I was visiting a couple of elderly friends in 1985, they told me that their young medical doctor had killed himself after various troubles that ended with a divorce in which he lost the custody of his children. His death shocked all of Dr. Sid's patients and friends. My two friends felt so deeply and emotionally about it that I asked if one of them would be willing to channel for Dr. Sid. I felt that he probably needed assistance on the other side and perhaps we could help him. With the husband in hypnosis, I called Dr. Sid by name, telling who we were. He came, sad and cast down. When I asked what the last straw had been, the one that broke him, he said, "The loss of my family." What he had not realized at the time was that his death would be a still further shock to his children and make them feel they had lost their father even more completely than by the divorce. In one's distress, however, one seldom pauses to think and reason things out. The emotions and pain carry one away into acts that may later be bitterly regretted. It was so with Dr. Sid. He was desperately sorry for his deed but did not know what to do. Without attempting to do more than to assure him that many people mourned his death for his patients had loved and trusted him, we asked if someone would come to help him find the path from this earthbound trap into the next dimension. A friend of his, previously deceased, came at once and we were happy to know that Dr. Sid was on the way home. Wanderers, sometimes clairvoyant or psychically sensitive people, have felt or seen an entity in my house. Several such 124 instances have resulted in the rescue of the entity, with the help of the living person as a channel in hypnosis. A man and his horse. The first time this occurred was during a meeting of a small group of women who had all taken the ESP course from Nan Taylor and had continued to meet, discuss, and meditate together. Two of the group said they had perceived a man standing inside the front door as they meditated. I felt that perhaps the stranger was forlorn and could use some help. It would not be courteous to order him away without knowing what he wanted. With one of the ladies in hypnosis, I called the man, and we got his story. A loner with no friends but his horse, he had been thrown off and killed. His head hitting a stone, when his horse stumbled on a loose rock. Now, not realizing that he might call his horse, he was simply wandering aimlessly. I asked him to call his horse and he immediately saw it coming, felt it nuzzling his shoulder, and the two friends were united. I felt it safe to ask Brownie to be the guide and take her master to his rightful home, trusting the intelligence and wisdom of the animal whose love and faithfulness drew the two together. Lisa, a second instance that occurred in my house was a few months later. A young woman had come to help with secretarial work, most of which was located in one certain room. Before long she came to me, asking, "Is there an entity in that room?" I got the coldest chill. "And what did you do?" I screamed and cried, and tried to put my arms around my son, my daughter. They didn't respond. They cried, and cried, and cried. Then I went for a walk in the forest for a while. It got darker and darker. It's lonely, the darkness. I don't want to stay in the darkness. I don't want to be lonely. Then you need not be lonely anymore, Lisa, or in darkness. But you need to put out of you those dark things like anger, resentment, and fear and envy. I am feeling lighter. Now look for the brighter things in you, your love and faithfulness. Joy. Laughter. Laughter. I can laugh again. I used to laugh with the children. Will I see my children? I think probably you will. Oh, they're coming. Weeping, my children are here. They say, come with us. Oh, I thank you so much. Before you go, tell me if you can see John. He's still standing in the shadows. I don't want to go away and leave him there. All right, you and the children wait right there. John, will you please come and talk to us? John, I hear that you were not very nice to your wives. That is true. I'm ashamed. What do you wish had been different? I'd have more love in my heart, less selfishness. I'm glad that your honesty and frankness make you see that. I don't deserve to go to the light. A lot of people feel that way. Are you judging yourself? We are told, judge not. Just push that insensitivity and selfishness out of you, and loneliness. Oh, loneliness! Exclamation marks and pride. I was too proud to let them know I loved them. 127. See, you do have lots of bright things in you. You loved them. You were a good provider. Yes, I worked hard for them. So come out of the shadows and be with your family. They are waiting for you. Now you are all together again. Goodbye. Often I have wished that I had asked for the date and place of these early rescues. Not being a researcher primarily, in the sweep of the drama of rescuing these pathetic souls, often I ignore such mundane things. This seems to have been in early colonial times in America. A researcher would be interested in all such points. John, a third entity who came into my house, was perceived by a woman who was one of a small group taking my class in regression techniques. She felt a presence near the end of the sofa. She said the presence came still closer until it seemed to be right beside her. She was somewhat disturbed. I asked if she wished to channel for the entity. She feared it might take too much time from the class. Inasmuch as the entity had intruded so conspicuously, however, I felt that perhaps this was something of an emergency, or else something that the students needed to know. I asked the lady to place herself into self-hypnosis, and this is what the entity told us little by little as I questioned him. He saw fire everywhere. This was Boston Harbor. He had been on a ship, and with anguish he confessed it he had been careless and had started the fire, first on the ship. Then it spread to oil on the water, then to the pier in the port, spreading rapidly until everything began to burn. He was escaping in a small boat with 128 Louis Island Frey, M.D. another man until the enormity of the disaster caused him in his anguish to jump back into the burning water himself. Since then he had been wandering for a long time. Sometimes he still saw the fire, but often he was in darkness. His brother Giuseppe had been among those killed in the fire. The name Giuseppe gave me a thought. What religion do you have, John? When he said Catholic, I said, I ask Mother Mary to come please and stand here, looking at you. Do you see her? What do you see in her eyes? What is her expression? She's smiling, she says, come with me. She cares about me. He was weeping. She will take you to your own proper place, John. She knows you are sorry for your carelessness. I imagine you will want to make it up to all those whose lives were cut short by the fire, won't you? Oh, yes, he agreed instantly. The thought of being able to make restitution gave him a feeling of new purpose and worth. He became calm and gravely happy. Giuseppe came without my calling him and greeted his brother with forgiveness in his eyes. When there is great remorse and guilt, it often seems that ordinary philosophizing and programming are not enough to relieve these, and the power of a bright being is required. Ephraim, a fourth and somewhat different rescue occurred when my co-worker Lily was giving a demonstration of channeling for a number of other ladies in my home. I wanted, for one thing, to check on Ephraim, the mentally retarded man 129, whose throat had been torn by a dog. When I was contacting him earlier, he saw a guide coming, but it seemed that the guide's face had changed from friendly to unfriendly. This had perplexed me. I did not know for sure what it indicated and wanted to find out Ephraim's present situation. Therefore I worded my invitation, through Lily, I am calling the Ephraim who is mentally retarded. Will you please come and talk with us? If you still have fear, let it release you. Ephraim, as you may remember from chapter 4, used finger answers almost entirely. Now the yes finger was bobbing up and down. Are you willing to talk to us today? Yes. Will you tell us your full name? Ephraim Hiram Manetha. Ephraim Hiram Manetha was the very distinct pronunciation. He called it Ephraim. Manasseh, do you mean? Do you lisp and say Manetha? Manetha. He corrected firmly. Thank you for coming, Ephraim. You're a nice lady. Another nice lady is here, too, letting you use her mouth to talk. Tell us about yourself. Do you have a family? MHM. Daddy's big, great big. Do you have brothers and sisters? MHM, lots. I have John and I have Harold and I have Mark and I have Lucius and I have Toby and I could not write down the names as fast as he said them. Do you have some sisters, too? MHM, I have Sally and I have Martha and I have Sarah and, there were more. Which is the littlest one? Me. He boasted. Lily afterward told me she had seen two sisters smaller than he, but he was treated as the littlest one and wanted to be in that favored position. 130. Does your daddy love you? Sometimes a retarded child may be favored or rejected, I guess so. There was a hesitation, a doubt. Does your mama love you? MHM. Now go walking on the years like a path, Ephraim, and tell me important things that happened to you. What's a year? It's the time from one birthday to another birthday. Tell me about an important time. The time my brother set the mule on fire. He roared with laughter. It ran round and round. It got bloated and made a lot of farts and my brother set the farts on fire. That's funny. It ran all around the barn, he was cackling almost hysterically. Did the mule get all right? Well, he never did that anymore. He giggled. Now you are older, Ephraim. What is another important event? Well, my sister Sally got married. He laughed. My brother rode the mule right into the house and upstairs. He began to laugh uncontrollably again. Where did you live, Ephraim? Arkansas. Don't you live the, too? Where am I? Colorado? That's a long ways away. I want to go home. Ephraim, go to the last day you were in your own body. How big are you now? No different. See what happened that day. I got up. It was sunny. I ate some breakfast. Then I went outside. I don't remember. Don't you know? I know about one Ephraim, but I don't know for sure about you. I don't want to be here. I want to go home. Writing, yes, we have the contact, impish little fellow, name, Conrad. This little one means no harm. He enjoys watching Dr. Louise work, likes the feel of her home. This child passed over in 1956. He was in a fire. He has not accepted his own death. There was no religious upbringing, he has no knowledge of life, death, heaven, hell, or hereafter. That must be explained. You will need to bring his mother, Elvira, to him. She is on this side and is adjusted. She will take him to the light as soon as he accepts he needs to go. When you hear his, yes, I understand, call his mother. She will take care of the rest. Well, fine. But since I am neither clairvoyant nor clairaudient, how was I to hold a conversation with Conrad and know when he said he understood? Oh, you'll see him. You'll hear him. You'll know, assured my friend. Maybe you're right, but my conscious mind doesn't see or hear. So how will I know? Well, just sit down and call him to you and talk to him as if you could see him, and tell him what happened, how his body died in the fire and he is causing you trouble and needs to go to the light. Tell him his mother is waiting for him. That grand old motto again, it can't hurt and it might help. Glad that my neighbors could not see, I did exactly as told, placing myself in waking self-hypnosis first, for the hypnotic state is a great catalyst. I did remember to ask Conrad, but only as he was already about to leave with Mother, if he would fix up the many things he had managed to botch up while here. I wish that I had asked him first, given him a few days, and then released him. As it was, I had nearly $200 worth of repairs on various things. A few did begin to run again on their own, however repaired by Conrad. 136. Puberty. Although I had read about such phenomena in various books and articles, the very first poltergeist type of activity I ever witnessed for myself was in Nurse Johnny's home. Our ESP group was meeting there that day. Outside the east patio doors a porch swing was hung. Outside the south window grew a young aspen tree. People used to call aspens quakies or quakin asps because of the way the small round leaves flutter with every breath of wind. This evening Jeanette glanced out the east doors and then stared at the porch swing. Is there a wind? She asked. I looked out at the tree. No, not a bit of wind. Look at that porch swing, said Jeanette. We all moved to where we could see. It was swinging rhythmically. No one was in it. No one visible, at any rate. Johnny put her hand to her mouth. Some of us turned to take another look at the aspen tree. It was still. Whatever it is out there, I said, we are stronger than it is. There are five of us here, and our guides. Let's put ourselves into waking hypnosis and tap into universal mind for all the protection, energy, and wisdom we may need. One lady, a new member of the group, had been complaining about numerous family matters all evening since the meeting began. I had wondered secretly if Lana would make a congenial member, if this was her usual type of personality now, as we sat talking about whatever it was out there, she began to cry out. He's right here. He's right in front of me. He's strong. Her hands were fluttering in front of her chest as if electrically vibrating. We had been discussing such things as the recent massacre at the McDonald's restaurant in California, and I had mentioned that since I knew some of Hitler's victims had 137, been reincarnated as Americans, no doubt some of Hitler's stooges were now Americans as well. As soon as you mentioned Hitler, Lana cried, here he came. Oh, he's strong. We grouped ourselves around her. In hypnosis we placed a visualized protective aura around her and commanded the entity, whatever it was, to leave her and move away. We decided to use our meditation period to contact this entity, find out who it was and what it wanted. Johnny was delegated to channel the entity while the rest of us received as many impressions as possible, and are guided by asking questions.